This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Pre-show performance by Portland's favorite late-night talk show host, Contessa de la Luna. That's Valentine's Day starting at 7 p.m. for Contessa de la Luna live on stage, followed by the film Rear Window. Doors open at 6:30 at the Clinton Street Theater, 26th and Southeast Clinton in Portland. Tickets are available now at Brown Paper Tickets. Seating is limited. 100% of ticket sales go to KBOO for this benefit spectacular. See events under the KBOO website for February 14th, Valentine's Day. See you there.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor an evening with Scott Silber, speaking on Threat to Themselves and Others, Intervention on Corporate Addiction to Power, Before It's Too Late. He'll be in Portland on Sunday, February 17th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1011 Southwest 12th Avenue, at the corner of 12th and Salmon. Scott Silber is National Director of National Intervention, who are calling for a 28th constitutional amendment to eliminate corporate personhood. More information about Scott and the event can be found at kboo.fm/ScottSilber2013.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Raven's Flight Creative, presenting an evening with author, comedian, inventor, and mustache enthusiast, John Hodgman from The Daily Show. John Hodgman speaks at the Baghdad Theater Thursday, March 7th at 7 p.m. The Baghdad Theater is at 3702 Southeast Hawthorne, and accompanying minors are welcome. Tickets at CascadeTickets.com.
Baby! 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 Baby!
It's 8:05 a.m., and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving, and today, American Winter. Looking at the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression, from the eyes of everyday people, we're going to be joined for the entire hour with the Gantz brothers, Joe and Harry. Their documentary, American Winter, was filmed over the course of one winter in Portland. It's coming to HBO in March, but it's also going to be shown this Sunday at the Portland International Film Festival. Harry and Joe, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Good morning. Thank
you for having us.
You guys are complicated. You're separate people, though, right? You're in separate places. Where are you at?
Well, we live in Los Angeles, but we're at different places calling in.
Okay. Did you, Harry and Joe, by any chance, did you listen to the State of the Union address last night? Critics are saying President Obama passed up the opportunity to actually announce a specific measure, any specific measures, to combat child poverty, and hope was for a National Commission on Children to combat child poverty in the country. What was your take? And we'll talk about the movie in a minute, but I just want to jump to the State of the Union. What was your take?
Well, I think he addressed income inequality, and he addressed the fact that we have to, you know, make things easier in this country and fairer in this country for struggling families. But I think you're right. He didn't say what plans he was going to try to enact to address those issues.
All right. I've never had related guests talking on the same line before, so I'm not sure if I should reach out and say, other brother, did you have an opinion? Or I'm not sure how to handle that. But here, I want to jump ahead then and say, Harry and Joe, American Winter, you decided to film it in Portland. Tell us, what is the movie about, and why did you decide to film it in Portland? I mean, you could have chosen anywhere. Why Portland?
This is Joe.
Awesome.
And what we noticed was that, you know, first there was the economic downturn, which was, as you said, the greatest downturn since the Great Depression. And it was followed by a tremendous amount of folks who were out of work, struggling financially. They lost their house. They lost their jobs. And just at that time, for some strange reason, as a country, we decided that we had to attack the budget deficits. So across the country, in state legislature and the national legislature, we were, as a country, deciding that we had to, you know, bring our fiscal house into order and cut budgets, which means we were cutting services and the help that these families across the country needed in order to, you know, get through these difficult times. My brother and I, our specialty over the years is capturing life in progress. And so we come into people's lives and we try to stay in the background and show what they're going through, what they're dealing with. And we thought the way we work would be good for this type of documentary. And we wanted to show exactly how this was playing out, you know, on a human level, in families across the country. And so we chose Portland because we thought that it was a city that was relatable. It felt like, you know, not too big a city, not too small of a city, you know, somewhat urban, you know, but not too urban, you know, that you had a cross-section of folks from different backgrounds. It wasn't New York or L.A., which people kind of in the middle of the country can decide that's not us. And we worked with 211. 211 is a information hotline, and people in crisis or families in crisis can call in and you know, try to ask for help. And 211 doesn't give them help, but it gives them the names of any agency that might be able to help them. Mm-hmm. So it helps them get organized and decide what they need to do. And we worked at 211. And we would listen to the calls as they came in and ask some of the families if we could follow their lives.
And Oregon is unique in that it actually has some decent social services. There is health care, universal health care for children. The Oregon Food Bank is very, very active in trying to end childhood hunger. But the point is that in this particular recession, there's this whole new group of people needing social services, the formerly middle class, who've fallen into now the same need base as the chronically poor. And so even Oregon, who has decent social services, the social service agencies have been taxed to the max. So both government and secular and religious nonprofits, together with all the resources they have, still were unable to meet the demand of this growing group of needy families and helping them to try to get back on their feet and back into the middle class with less and less resources. And people are talking about the budget cuts that happen on a federal level now, but in 2011 there were massive budget cuts to social services. For instance, $390 million were cut from energy assistance. So as we're listening to 211 in the beginning of the month and hearing call after call, well, I can't pay my electric bill. They're about to turn off the electricity. The agencies that were there to help those folks had less resources to work with, and more people went without heat or without electricity.
And this is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're live on the line with the Gantz brothers, Joe and Harry. We're talking about their documentary, American Winter. It's going to be screened, I think the premiere is this Sunday at the Portland International Film Festival. And you just heard Joe and Harry talk about, they're talking about 211. Here we call it 211 Info. And the way that works, listeners, maybe you're familiar with it. I think you literally take your phone and dial 211 and get hooked up with a call center of people who talk about, you know, who basically try to figure, help you figure out what resources there are to help you. And they offer job resources, energy assistance, housing assistance, and I believe help with medical care. They're not 211 Info. It's a switchboard resource. They point you to where you need to go. And you can also go to their website. It's 211info.org. Really recommend you do that. A big staff of people over there doing amazing things. And it looks like we actually have a caller. Let's go to the phone lines real quick. We have Sean on the phone. Sean, what's going on? What do you think? Sean, are you there?
Hi.
Hey, Sean, what's going on?
Good morning. I was thinking about what your guests would think of a wealth tax. We keep hearing that there's no money. You know, there's... Darn it, you know, we just don't have the resources to do anything. The money isn't there. And yet I know that we're one of the wealthiest countries on planet Earth. And a wealth tax, a confiscatory wealth tax, which would claw back a lot of the, you know, the gains of the super rich over this 30-year class war, might, you know, the resources would be there. Like, just yesterday I heard some guy on Bloomberg News say that to actually address America's mental health crisis, it would cost something like $240 billion over the next 7 years. And they were saying, oh, well, you know, that the money just isn't there for that. Well, I'm sorry. The wealth is there. It's just, it's not through income tax. It's not through sales tax. What we need is a wealth tax.
Sean's putting the big one on the table. Thanks for calling, Sean.
Well, one last thing. There's no leverage. You know, Lisa, you got upset at me one day for saying that we should be stockpiling assault rifles. Well, there's no, it's unlike the 1930s when we had a viable left, when we had a viable Communist Party. We actually had leverage when people were willing to talk about taking to the streets. But we have no leverage now, and it's a complete failure of the left to not gain this leverage to do something like a wealth tax. Thanks.
Sean, actually, thank you very much. Sean put some of the big throbbing questions that I had issues on the table for us. And we can, and we're, this is Wednesday Talk Radio. For the rest of the hour, we are with the Gantz brothers, really talking about poverty. And we're talking about the documentary that Joe and Harry have done about families in the Portland area that literally, are at the risk of losing everything. And I do want to get to what Sean's kind of talking about is what is the obvious solution to this. Joe and Harry, I want to give you back the microphones, as it were, and talk a little bit about what you saw. And then I definitely want to go back to some of the things that Sean is talking about. Because, Joe and Harry, I mean, this level of poverty, these attacks on the middle class, they didn't just happen overnight, right? So, Joe and Harry, talk a little bit more about what you found out as you were interviewing people, a number of families, a multiracial cast of families that are in American Winter. Joe and Harry, talk about what you think were the worst parts of what people are trying to deal with.
Well, when we were listening onto the calls at 211, they get, you know, hundreds of calls every day, and we listen for weeks and weeks, so we listen in on thousands of calls. And, you know, we made this documentary, but if we were to listen, you know, in on a different week, like this week in Portland, or really in any city across the country, we'd find that there'd be, you know, just another group of people that are struggling with the same issues. They're struggling, you know, with not having enough to, you know, pay their bills, even if they're working. Many of these people are working, but they're working in, you know, minimum wage or close to minimum wage jobs, and they just cannot support the family and keep a roof over their head, keep the electricity on and the heat and everything else with a minimum wage job. So these are not families who are, you know, used to this situation. Most of these families say they've been working since they were teenagers, and they never had this problem. suddenly they're out of work, or their job has been changed in that they're maybe doing a similar job, but they're being paid much less than they were 5 years ago, and they can no longer support their families.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it is a lot of psychological pressure just on everybody in the crew to be out there day after day following these families and seeing, you know, these children suffering, whether it's, you know, fear of hunger, fear of losing their home, trying to do their homework in the dark without electricity. That takes a toll on us, but, you know, of course, nothing compared to the toll it takes on them.
Right.
There's a tremendous amount of stress on American families now, and, you know, I really think that the people who are going through this, and 46% of American families are poor or near poor right now. 46, that's nearly half. If you count the people who are paycheck away from this type of situation, you know, it really is, you know, over half this country. So people across the country are dealing with this, and but the people who don't have to deal with this, I think they don't really realize, they can't visualize what it's like for these families. They haven't struggled like this, and that's where this film can come in. This is not a divisive film. We tried to make it in a way that would be non-polarizing. We wanted to show what families are struggling with so that people from across the country, from across the spectrum, can see who these families are. There's a lot of stereotypes that are put on people who need social services who are struggling in this country. But most of those stereotypes are far from true. The people who we found, who we followed, were people who had been working their whole lives, that wanted nothing more than a decent job that could support their family. They were hardworking folks. They seemed a lot like families that, you know, I knew from where I live and people in my own family. The only difference is that they were struggling at this moment, and they didn't really know how to get out of this situation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we wanted to make a film that would show kind of the human side. There's been a lot of discussion about how we got in this fix, you know, what financial things with Wall Street brought us here, and what fixes could get us out of this. But I think the first thing to do is to see who these people are. And when you see the families and see how they're just like your own family, how relatable they are, how hardworking they are, and how they want the best for their kids just like everybody else does, it makes it a slightly different discussion in our view. You can't simply say, you know, we need to, you know, come up with this financial solution which cuts, you know, $1 trillion from the budget because we need that for the long term. You have to look at the short term and look at how we take care of families in this country, because we really are a wealthy country.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to, you know, care for one another.
We're live on the phone with Joe and Harry Gantz. We're talking about their documentary, American Winter. It's going to be premiering at the Portland International Film Festival this Sunday. You can go to our KBOO website and follow the links to see how you can go and see that film. And they're also going to have a benefit reception for 211 Info right after the screening, so you can go and meet some of the people involved and figure out how maybe you can get involved with helping people too. And, I, you know, on a personal note, I have to say, watching this documentary, what struck me, and, you know, on these airwaves on the Wednesday Talk Radio, we've had a number of people in the past year, Occupy activists that are helping people from getting their homes foreclosed. We've had people talking about educational issues, people talking about job interviews, job issues, development issues. But there's something about this film, American Winter, that brings you right into the living room of people that are on the verge of losing everything, and listening to them talk to their kids about it, listen to what the kids have to say about it. And what I hear you Gantz brothers saying is, yes, economic solutions, you know, what does Obama think, what did he say in the State of the Union, but the first thing we have to do is make everyone in this country, bring everyone onto the same page about what this level of poverty looks like and how it's affecting more and more people. And at my house, my husband just got a significant health diagnosis. We're a month behind in our mortgage. We started listening to the radio where there was a report like a month ago that said that how much food is wasted in the United States. It was a stunning amount. And my husband he's looking around our house, and he's underemployed too right now. It's winter, right? And he's been saying this for weeks. We're surrounded by luxury. We've got a microbrew in the refrigerator, and we're behind a month in our mortgage. What does this mean? What are we doing? What's going on? We're bringing in another renter into our home. We're trying to figure out what to do. But I'm telling you, listeners, it's like being at the top of a slide and looking down and wondering, you know, we're talking about one paycheck away, la-di-da, but we're all in this boat. It's Wednesday Talk Radio. We have a caller, another caller. Let's go to that phone line. Joanne, Joanne, tell us what it's about, Joanne.
Hello. I know what I'm going to say will not make an impact anywhere, and this is not new in my life, but it also gives an example how I am personally powerless. I am worn out and tired about people talking about poverty, and I'm worn out and tired living in poverty.
All right. Thanks for calling, Joanne. She's putting a heaping serving on the table there.
And I really don't blame people for feeling like that, having made the film and, you know, live with these families, and as we film them, being in their lives as we film them, you know, the level of stress that folks go through when every day they're juggling another bill, every day they're worried about, you know, is electricity going to get turned off? Is the rent not going to get paid? Are we going to get evicted? Are we going to get foreclosed on? Do we have enough food for our family? The level of stress that the parents are dealing with, and that filters down to the kids, they certainly know what's going on, is overwhelming and it's unrelenting. And to see people living like that, you just feel like that, you know, that's not right. The trauma that causes in the family, and particularly for the kids. Can you expect kids to do well in school when they don't know if they're going to have enough to eat, if they don't know if they're going to have the electricity, or if they're going to even be evicted? That level of trauma is not only a problem for those kids now as they're going through it, but it can actually reverberate through the rest of their lives. And what we learned from doing this film, and it was expressed extremely well by Nick Fish, who is the commissioner in Portland.
Portland City Commissioner Nicholas Fish. Yes, he's incredibly articulate. Keep going.
Very articulate. He points out that, you know, they've done study after study where it is cheaper as a country to help people who are in need before they slide further down and they get in a situation where they do lose their homes, and then you have to help them, you know, get back on their feet. It is so much cheaper to help people, you know, in a way that gets them over the hump so they can live a life where they're not, you know, on the street and getting social services from emergency care and from the police, from the emergency people who come and give health care on the street. It's so much cheaper to help people beforehand, but yet as a country, we have this antipathy towards, you know, handing out things that we think, you know, that people on the right talk about as, you know, giveaways. Mm-hmm. But
the one thing I will disagree with her is that it is important to talk
and
about
help
it.
Kids. It's so much cheaper to help families and help kids before they fall through the cracks. And it would mean savings now, but it would also mean that these kids grow up in a way that they can do well in school and they can become contributing members to society. So it definitely helps in the long term even more.
Say again about it's important to talk about.
Yeah, because, you know, for me, there's very little discussion about poverty and that, you know, those of in the community that are upper middle class or better, this could just as easily be happening in Rwanda. They don't know that, you know, two neighborhoods over people are suffering like this. You know, they may give a little something at church or donate to a food bank, but this is a critical situation. This is the demise of the middle class if we don't make a move soon to bring people back up and to at least instill the faith in people that if you do work hard and do what's right, that you can get ahead. Because it's not only what's happening literally, it's what's happening to our collective psyche, feeling that, hey, we're going to be stuck here forever because there's no way out.
All right. And we have a couple threads going on here in this discussion. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host. My name is Lisa. We're live on the phone with Joe and Harry Gantz. They're talking about their documentary film, which is going to air on HBO. In March. The film was called American Winter. It was filmed in Portland over the course of one winter. I think it was a year ago. Maybe it was 2 years ago.
A year ago.
So very recent. And Joanne's putting something on the table. She's like, why are we always talking about this? When are we going to do something about it? Sean is saying, look, you need to look at the history and why is the left? The left has no leverage to be able to make a change. And he's coming back to a point he made a few weeks ago, that people should be stockpiling assault rifles, which, you know what? I know for a fact that people are stockpiling assault rifles. You have to have money in the bank to do even that, by the way. And we do have another caller. I just want to say a couple more things about this film. Now, we're talking about poverty because this is talk radio. It's not calisthenics radio or, I don't know, work it out video or anything like that. This is a place where we come and share ideas and we talk about these ideas. And if people want to start calling in with your ideas of things that you're doing to help in your community against poverty, awesome. At my house, we've offered housing to people over the past couple of years free of charge. And we see people who really need, especially young people that really need a place to live, but also older people who are in transition. A person who spent 6 months living with us without paying any rent. All she really needed was the time to have put her name into the housing system and then actually gotten some place to live. All she needed was a place to be during that time. And so she's now in the housing system, which is its own difficult thing. But that's one thing that we've done at our house. And I also, the other thing that really gets me is the thing that Sean was saying, this film, American Winter. I mean, we go through our lives in this country. We're accustomed to poverty. We see it every day. We pass people that are sleeping in the street, living in the street every day. I don't even know where you would have to live not to experience that all the time. And yet we know there's unbelievable wealth in this country. And we, you know, people like Joanne, people like Sean, people that are normal listeners to KBOO Community Radio or even this show, we know what the issues are. But what about my family that lives in California? What about my auntie that lives in Oklahoma? I don't think they look at these issues. I don't think they think about them. In Portland, we have a bubble. And what I hear the Gantz brothers saying is we actually don't have the whole country on this same page yet. People aren't really just looking at the ugliness that of the poverty that we have in this country. What I hear the Gantz brothers saying is that's their goal in this movie. And we have another caller. Let's quickly get to the phone line. We have Heidi on the phone. Heidi, what's on your mind?
Hey, Lisa. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a single parent that's been dealing with poverty. I work hard. I've got school loan debt looming. I have to say, my sister deals with it on a daily basis. My mom lives right down the street, and she pretty much tunes out what we're dealing with on a daily basis. And so I deal with this, and I hear Joanne. I hear her frustration when she calls in. I listen to KBOO every single day. I understand what Sean's saying. It is tiring, but it's also tiring, the demonization of single parents, male or female or whatever you identify as, in the media. They don't understand what it's like to be a part of the system. And the reason why I'm calling is because I don't think, unless you've been part of the welfare system, that people understand how it works. And so I want to give quickly a quick little breakdown about why the poverty of cycle continues, especially if you've been a part of the system. Here's the thing. When you start to make even a little bit more of money, if you're going to get any kind of money for school, whatever, they deem you. And then they cut down what they're going to give you. And so then you get on the system, you think, oh, I'll get a little bit to stick away. No. And then you have to lie, because if they find out you get any more money, they cut back what you get. And then they think, oh, we've given you all this stuff, we're going to give you 3 months. If you've been living in poverty for like 5 or 6 years, 5 or 6 or 3 months is nothing. And so I'm sure you and probably the guys that are doing the film probably understand this. I don't think people understand the way the welfare system works. And so just when you think you're going to get ahead, they don't give you any room. And then you're like, well, you're getting all this money. We're giving you all these food stamps. You should be able to get caught up. But if you're 2 or 3 years behind in your bills, and then you're like, oh, I have now have a couple hundred of wiggle room, and they're like, sorry, we're taking your food stamps down $200 or $300. And I hope that's making sense the way I'm putting it. It's just this cycle, and it's so hard to get out of, and then you feel bad, and then you try to stay in, you know, connected in the media, and you hear the way they talk about people like myself who work my butt off to try and provide for my daughter. And so it's just, and that's depressing. Your kids see it. You try to keep it. That's the other thing is single parents try to not put the burden on the kids. And how do you feel day in and day out? You know, and so I just wanted to put those issues on the table because I think it's important that people understand the system is there, but it also helps perpetuate the cycle. And that was my main point I wanted to share with you. So thank you for this really important conversation.
Thanks for calling, Heidi. And
can I comment on that, Lisa?
Yeah, please do.
The thing is that when you look at the tax system, as we did in this film, the wealthy get far more benefits from tax breaks and tax incentives than do the poor and the middle class, far more. But yet, when you hear them talk, when you hear people talk on Fox Radio and other places, like the night that they declared the victory for Obama, they were talking about the takers. It is a very much of a misconception. And what we need to do is to first, you know, adequately define the situation, that there are tremendous, you know, tax advantages and incentives for the well-off and for the middle class that outnumber what is given to you know, struggling people, struggling families. And secondly, we have to adequately define what we're talking about when these families are needing help. You know, they make it seem like the objective of folks is to stay in the system and to take advantage of the system, when for the vast, vast majority of the folks, it is to get themselves on their feet and to be a person who no longer needs that help and then can, you know, pay taxes and contribute to society and be productive. And it is cheaper, once again, to help folks and to get them back to being a contributing member, and the amount of help that we give is far worth it in terms of just saving money in the long run.
All right. And the other thing, Heidi, the other thing that really strikes me as I watched American Winter was the point that Heidi's making, the point you Gantz brothers, I'm just going to start calling you Joe and Harry. The point Joe and Harry is making is that there's something about the system that once you get in it, it can just build around you. And one of the themes that I saw in American Winter was, okay, you're at risk of getting evicted from your house. One of the moms was saying, we can't get evicted because if you get evicted, you can't get another rental. Nobody wants to rent to you. If you, you know, if you're out of work, it's harder to get a job. It's like every step backward makes it four times harder to step forward. I mean, and that goes back to what Heidi was saying about the system.
And each of those things is not understood. How difficult it is. If someone wants to evict you, you can get evicted for a petty thing that you wanted to be, you know, 5 days late with your rent, or you wanted to pay overtime and they wouldn't let you. But yet, if they evict you, you can have a family and have no chance of getting another apartment to rent. You don't have any recourse. You don't have any lawyer representing you. It's just, it can be arbitrary. You can have a very mean-spirited landlord, and then that can haunt you for years and years. And as this woman was saying on the phone, if you get some bit of help, and then you get maybe a little bit more money come in because you are working, then they penalize you by taking away from your rental assistance. So they take away from your food stamps. So you're back in the same place where you're barely scraping by, where you're living with stress every day of your life, not knowing how you're going to pay your bills. It's not a system that actually makes it possible in many ways for people to get that leg up and get back into contributing and getting their lives in order.
I want to take that one a little step farther and say that also when you sign up for some of these federal programs, such as food stamps and stuff like that, food stamp program is actually a pretty good program. You sign up for some of these programs, and I'll also say that as I watched American Winter, every single solitary one of these families said that they were horrified to find themselves on public assistance. None of them wanted it, and that it made them feel demoralized. But here's what I'm going to say. If you're on one of those programs and you fill out a form wrong, they can call the law down on you. It's like a federal offense if you're filling out a food stamp application and you put wrong information on there. In fact, actually, Homeland Security used that as a way to prosecute a guy, 10 years ago, who was a local imam who was going out of the country, and he went through, I'm not actually off topic here, he went through, how do you call that, security at the Portland airport. The security person looked at him. He was an observant Muslim man. They said that they found dynamite residue in his bags. That went sent. They pulled the guy off the street. They threw him in jail. And basically, when it came down to it, there was no dynamite in the bags. But he was actually charged and convicted of filling out wrong information on a food stamp application. So when we're talking about these systems of the foods, I mean, there are big sticks in that system. It's actually it's punitive in a lot of ways. And this is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're live on the phone with Joe and Harry Gantz. We're talking about their new documentary, American Winter, looking at the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. From the eyes of everyday people, the film was made in Portland over the course of one winter. That would be last winter a year ago. You guys did a Kickstarter campaign to make the film happen. And now this one-hour documentary, which is just about poverty, gritty, gritty poverty right here in our town. It's going to be on HBO in March, and it's going to be, this film is going to premiere at the Portland International Film Festival on Sunday. And there's going to be a benefit for 211 Info right after that. And as people are talking about, you know, let's not just talk. I want to give massive respect to 211 Info, this series of nonprofit organizations which has sprung up all over the country. Now, Gantz Brothers, you guys have done other films about this. I mean, 211 Info, is it a movement? What is it? I mean, who thought it up?
211 started in I think it was the early 80s in Atlanta, and then became a national movement. Many of the 211s are either supported or run by the United Way. And I think it's just the maze that's involved with getting help in all different agencies, whether they're federal, state, whether they're nonprofit secular or nonprofit religious. A lot of people don't know how to navigate that, don't even know where to start, especially in this recent recession where there's this whole new population of formerly middle class who are almost shell-shocked and waiting until they're in a desperate situation because, like you said, many of them could never imagine them being in that place. So that's why 211 is really even more important now than it ever has been. It's almost like the arteries to get the people to all the parts of the body that, you know, is a metaphor that you need to survive. So it's a full-time job to navigate social services if you've never done it before.
Right.
And you can imagine being a single mother, working but still needing help, and 211 is vital to so many people to help them find their way through the social service community and get what they need.
And in this film, American Winter, the Gantz brothers go to the Portland 211 Info office. I call it 211 Info. I don't know, 211, 211. They actually go to that office. They interview the intake workers, the people that are answering the phones. I think the executive director is the awesome Liesl Wendt, right?
Right. Well,
she's incredible.
She just got a new job with the state, but she has been for many years.
She really was instrumental in building this up here in Portland. Also in this film, Reverend Kate Lohr is very articulate. And of course, we already talked about Kamish Fish, who I see him trying a lot of initiatives that it is, like Sean said, it's really hard to get traction to do some of this in front of the machine, poverty prevention stuff. And we do have a caller. Let's rush to the phone lines. We have Carrie on the phone. Carrie, what do you think?
Oh, I wanted to respond to what the woman said about when you get one step ahead, you get knocked two steps back,
yeah.
That whole phenomena. And I've been in and out of being a recipient of social services, in and out a lot of my life, and poor a lot of my life. And I just think it's so built into the economic system. It's just, it's like trying to, break. There are so many people that profit from the poor.
Tell me about that. Tell me. Tell who?
Well, look at all, I mean, see, when I start talking about this, I really fear that I will sound so crazy and so ungrateful to people who probably are decent people. But look at all of the people who work in social services. Look at the mental health people who deal out little, here, have a little bite of, have a taste of what it might feel like to actually have good mental health. Oh, that's it. It's all over. Have a little bite of being able to buy some good food. Oh, no, you can't have any more. The disability lawyers, the Social Security disability lawyers, who a person can't get disability unless they know how to function in that system. And even if they know how, they'll probably get knocked down at the hearing process. And these lawyers make a very, very good living. And the Social Security administrators make a very good living. And there's a lot of people, the people who provide housing. It's they a developer can have a house or get some kind of living situation and get guaranteed payment from the federal government. What better kind of real estate investment? None of the food stamp program was originated to benefit farmers, and it's still benefiting the mega farmers, maybe to a small extent the little organic farmers. There's a little food markets where you can take a EBT card and you spend $5 and they'll give you 10. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of it flows out into the other economy. Anyway,
Carrie,
I sound like a completely
No, this
person?
Is completely fascinating, and thank you for calling. Carrie put some interesting things on the table there about who makes money from poverty, and I think that's a completely fascinating thing to look at.
Well, you know, in the film, Nick Hanauer, the Seattle billionaire, kind of addresses that. And I would say that the social service community is guilty of that on a very minor level, and that corporate America is guilty of that on a major level. So, for instance, a major corporation that doesn't give their minimum wage workers health care, that means those workers have to go to emergency to get their health care. And in a sense, we as taxpayers are subsidizing Walmart or whoever it is that is not giving health care to their workers.
You're
or
saying like wage
their
theft.
Own industry who's charging exorbitant fees, because poor people have no other options. So there is a bit of that in the social service community, but mostly the social service community is hands are tied because of, you know, the limited resources they have to give out. Mm-hmm. Whereas
and then,
I
would like
corporations
to also address
are doing
the
it for
idea
maximizing their profits.
That both of these women who are calling in are talking about how they want, it's almost like they'll give a little help, but not enough help to really get over the hurdle. In other words, they'll hand out enough so maybe you can eat poorly, not well, and you can, you know, perhaps not lose your apartment, but never enough so you can truly get back on your feet and start getting your life in order. And it's almost a fear of being generous to the point where you can really solve this problem. There's other countries in the world that that really have a social safety net that allows families to get by without the level of stress that our families are dealing with. People have to struggle just to, you know, get enough food on the table and just to balance this bill and that bill so they don't lose their power in their apartment. But in fact, if we gave, you know, a higher minimum wage, if we gave health care, if we gave more through social services, it wouldn't be people taking more. It would be people getting a leg up so they could truly get on their feet and truly provide for their families in a way that it would be good for the family and good for society.
I think this is a fascinating conversation, and I'm glad Carrie called, because I'm sitting here thinking, who profits on poverty? And I'm just going to put this out and say, I bet the biggest poverty profiteer in the United States is the prison system. I'm saying that. I put that out. We have a caller. Let's go to the caller. Bob, what's going on, Bob?
Yeah, my name's Bob. I'm from San Francisco. Thanks for the program. I can't wait to see the movie. I want to say a couple of things. I want to have one question. Number one, at what point will enough people in the United States of America have enough of this where they rise up and they revolt? That's question number one. statement number two, because every day in our prison systems, we're releasing thousands and thousands and thousands of prisoners that are coming out into the world. They're not going to get jobs because of their background.
They're not going to get rentals either. Go ahead.
They're not going to get rent. They're not going to get jobs. What will we be doing with these people? Those are my questions, and I'll hang up and listen to the answer.
Thanks a lot for calling, Bob. I have to say, the thing that really surprised me the most about American Winter was I figured, you know, I don't know, mortgage would be like one of the biggest things, or healthcare. But what a lot of people were really suffering from was a lack of energy. It's like getting their electricity turned off, which doesn't seem like the end of the world. But the kids telling the stories about how I'm having to cuddle together under four comforters on the couch, I bet a lot of people deal with that without necessarily going and losing their house and losing everything else. But now Sean and Bob are bringing up this point, Gantz brothers, that I want to ask you. Lately, I've heard people talking about what happened in the 1930s that led to the New Deal. And it had to do with literally a critical mass of employment versus unemployment. And literally the government's people in the government's fear that that so many people were going to start marching in the street that they really would cause a revolution, or at least they would get rid of these elected officials. And as I was reading something about this, I think I was reading something about this in the New York Times last weekend, it occurred to me, I don't think I've ever read about massive street demonstrations that preceded the Great Depression, of which there was bazillions. Again, we need to talk about what's happening and learn more. Gantz brothers, what do you think? What do you think it will actually take for people is it going to be about people standing up and demanding more, or demanding changes in the government, or changes in the tax code? You know, what is the step after the awareness step, Gantz brothers?
Well, it's complicated. In this country, people are they're stuck in, if you look at the statistics and you see that 46% of this country is in poverty or near poverty, if you count the people who are a paycheck away from that, it's more than half this country. Yet, you know, in a democracy, you would think that if the majority of this country is suffering in that way and struggling in that way, that they would try to do everything they could to enact laws and policies that really help make this country fair, have less income inequality, have more programs to lift people out of poverty and help the struggling middle class. So the question of why we don't do that, I've wondered that, and I don't have the answer. I'd like to know.
Part of the reason we featured families, and especially the voices of the children, is it doesn't matter what side of the political spectrum you're on. Mm-hmm. It's not the kids' fault that they're in this situation. So it defies, you know, the right wing's characterization of welfare queens. These are kids who are in this situation. They were born, some of them, into this situation. And it's in everybody's interest in our country to give them decent housing, to get them educated. And it doesn't matter, you know, even if your interests are economic more than humanitarian, if you create a strong middle class, you have customers for your products.
Exactly,
so
exactly.
It's in corporate America's best interest. It's in everybody's best interest. And you know, if the people in the middle and the right wake up and see that, they can avoid a revolution. This film can help, you know, bring people together rather than drag them to the streets. But obviously, if things don't happen, who knows what the future will bring?
It's going to take a lot to get a critical mass of people looking at what poverty looks like and accepting that it's wrong. You know, it's funny because I feel like the Monopoly game, whatever corporation owns Monopoly, changed they removed one of the little aluminum gadgets that you play that game with or whatever. They changed the Monopoly game. And all I could think of when I was listening to that on the radio was, what is the logo of Monopoly? It's a fat banker, right? You know, it's like, at what point do we even reach back into our own psyches and understand and wrap our brains around some of these things we've grown up with and we never even think about what they mean? Because we don't want to, in this country, I think, we don't want to deal with the fact that things could go wrong for us for no real reason. We all want to believe that all the people, we had a caller a couple weeks ago, you know, these people that have had their homes foreclosed, it's because of something they did. Meanwhile, I just got another press release about, is it Wells Fargo? Another company. No, I know. The feds are charging Standard & Poor's with fraud because they cheated in certifying these lending institutions that were ripping people off. Fraud, right? And if you just look at some of the money that these people are making, we could be flipping our society so that the money's going in the front end instead of the back end. So I want to say this is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host. I'm Lisa. We're live on the phone with the Gantz brothers, Joe and Harry. Their documentary, American Winter, was filmed over the course of one winter in Portland a year ago, and it's going to be premiering at the Portland International Film Festival this Sunday afternoon. It's also going to appear on HBO in March, and, you know, actually, HBO makes some proportion of their documentaries available for free after a while on their website. But the other thing I wanted to ask you, Gantz brothers, who do you want to see this movie? I think people who are poor people, or even people that are middle class people, are not necessarily the people who should see this movie. Who do you want to see the movie, and what impact do you want it to have?
Well, we, of course, want everybody to see the movie. Because,
okay, fair enough.
It's for slightly different reasons. I mean, you want well-off people to get a clearer picture of what's actually going on in this country. I had a doctor's appointment. I saw a new doctor who I'd never met. It was the day after the inauguration, and I said, "Oh, how did you like the inauguration speech, Obama's inauguration speech?" He said, "Oh, I didn't watch it." Okay, so I said, "Oh, okay, you don't like Obama? I don't like my taxes going up." I said, "Well, your taxes going up, and unless you're super wealthy, your taxes didn't go up that much." "Oh, well, I draw the line when I'm paying more than 50% of my income in taxes between state and federal. I'm paying more than 50%, and that's where I draw the line. I don't want to give that money to government." I said, "Well, you don't give it to government, really. You give it to, you know, police and firemen, and you give it to teachers, you give it to roads, you give it to, you know, all these things that you need and you use, and part of it goes to social services. And over the last 30, 40 years, there's been a change in the income distribution, where it used to be as the economy went up and as the corporations did better, everybody from every segment of society did better proportionately. Now the income distribution has changed, and as these companies, international companies, do better and as the economy does better, most of that money goes directly to the top tier, the top 10%, the top 1%, the top 1% of 1%. So you see that this person, this doctor, is not really, in my view, a terrible person. He's a compassionate person. He's a doctor. He's a very good doctor. But yet he doesn't have a view of what is going on. Everything has been distorted so much that he probably listens to, you know, a lot of Fox News or the things that are repeated, and accepts that as truth, when much of that are distortions. And the people who are, you know, needing help are hardworking folks. The taxes go towards things that are going to benefit all of us. It's not going to government. It's going to services that benefit everybody, including him. And if the poor and near poor get helped, it actually is going to help the economy as a whole, and help everybody, because there'll be more middle class people to buy goods
products
and services, including his health care.
Right. And it is Wednesday Talk Radio. We have a few minutes left in this show. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're live on the phone with Joe and Harry Gantz, whose new documentary, American Winter, is going to be premiering at the Portland International Film Festival this afternoon. It's going to be followed by a benefit
Not this afternoon.
I'm sorry, Sunday afternoon.
And also Monday. There's an additional showing on Monday.
Oh, I didn't know. Tell us the details. Where is it at?
Go to the Portland International Film Festival website, because I'm not sure the name of the theater, but there is another viewing on Monday evening.
Okay, great. And we do have links to that.
Monday at 7:30 and Sunday at 3 o'clock.
All right. And I also want to say that coming up at 9, people, this is going to be, this 9 o'clock show is going to be one for the history books. Paul Rowland is going to be interviewing Daryl Cherney on Cherney's recently released documentary, Who Bombed Judy Berry? Now, that film's called Who Bombed Judy Berry, but guess who was in the damn car with her? Okay, that would be Daryl Cherney. The 1990 car bombing of Earth First activists Barry and Cherney. You know, the FBI actually got, they had, you're going to hear more about this in the 9 o'clock hour, but there was a court judgment against the FBI. I think it may have been a civil judgment as opposed to a criminal judgment. They still, no one still knows exactly from the FBI who bombed that car, but that's going to be one for the history books. You've got to tune in at 9 to hear Paul Rowland and Daryl Cherney. Also at 10, Chris Andre, Air Cascadia. 10:15 on Flashpoints, Miguel Gavilan Molina speaks with Pablo Alvarado, National Director of the National Day Laborers Organizing Network, about fair immigration reform. At 11 on the Dirtbag, weeds and strategies to combat them. And we're going to go, I think we have one more caller. Let's try to get that last caller. Brian. Brian, what are you thinking about today?
Oh, I was falling asleep there. you know, you may, by the way, I wish your guest could bring this movie film to the coast.
To the Oregon coast.
We'd love to have some, you know, if I'd like to put that on here, because there's a lot of people here need to see this.
Oh, anyway. My God, the Oregon coast, is there's so much poverty there. It's heartbreaking. Go ahead,
yeah,
Brian.
It's almost polarized. There's the wealthy, and yeah, there's us.
Their vacation homes and stuff.
And a few rabble-rousers like me. And so anyway, you mentioned there's two things. You know, the way the punditocracy talks, there's no such thing as working class or poor in this country. It's all middle class. Now, I've never heard anything, you know, even nodding to the working class like it's a disgusting title.
Yeah.
But I heard on KABU somebody say that actually 62% of the U.S. working population would be considered working class. And it's getting worse as, you know, and working class used to mean you made a pretty good living here, but not anymore. It means, like, near poverty. Mm. But you come down to the basics, healthcare. Now, I had a six-figure income at one point and was a self-employed, you know, many things. But I got sick once, and that was the end of me. And thank goodness my wife and I are on Social Security now, and so we're not going to starve. But they're trying to take that away, too. But here's something I'm doing, and I'm not beating my own chest or anything, but, like, I've helped a friend of mine. He's a musician, and he's really, you know, got PTSD pretty bad. He had a brutal childhood, and a nurse and I managed to get him SSI disability, and it's really improved his life, but he still lives in a broken-down trailer. And I'd like to get him a home, and every time I get a little result for him, and I'm trying to get him gigs too, it makes me feel good. You know, it makes me feel like I'm not poor and that I can be of value. And I've just joined the Healthcare for All Oregon, and they're helping me to start an Oregon Coast chapter. So,
all right, Brian, it looks like we're running out of show. What I hear,
okay,
Brian saying is reach out to the people in your life that need help and see what you can do. And Gantz Brothers, it was such a pleasure to have you on the air. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having us. Thank you for all your attention to documentary filmmaking.
With you and your callers.
Great. That's it for our show. Thanks to our guests, Joe and Harry Gantz. More about their work at AmericanWinter.com. Also, follow the links to get tickets on the KABU website to their premieres. Special thanks to engineer Steve Nasser and Sky the Studio Dog. This show will be podcast on KABU.FM by the end of today. Grab that link and share it with your friends and family. I'm Lisa Loving. Follow me on Twitter for more news and information about the topics we discuss on this show. Theme music by the March 4th Marching Band. Thanks for listening, and help each other. Have a good day.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, 100.7 FM Corvallis and Albany. The time is 9:01. Coming up next, your host, Paul Rowland, as he interviews Daryl Cherney.
February 7, 2013, KBOO Navigator Report. On Valentine's Day, Contessa de la Luna is bringing a spectacular show, complete with music, games, prizes, and the classic movie Rear Window, to the Clinton Street Theater. 100% of the proceeds will benefit KBOO. Visit kboo.fm for details. Kaboom! 2013 is KBOO's 45th anniversary. Huge celebration plans are underway that will totally rock Portland. We are seeking unique and wonderfully creative artwork for our commemorative t-shirts and posters. Email navigator@kboo.org if you are interested in donating your services and having your work associated with this historic event. A Navigator communications team is forming. If you are someone who can take direction, has initiative, good follow-through, and has excellent written and verbal communication skills, and you have 2 to 4 hours each week to contribute making calls, sending emails, and being part of a social media squad, attend a meeting Sunday, March 3rd at 1 p.m. at KBOO. Refreshments will be provided. For more information, contact Lynn Fitch, 503-231-8032, extension 222, or navigator@kboo.org. Thank you.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to sponsor...
Now Judy Barry is a wobbly organizer, a mother Jones.